session on Korea and Japan. My name is Mark Peterson. I teach Korean literature and history here at BYU. I'm not in the law school, but I've been asked to come in and assist with this particular program because the specialty is in my area of Korea and Japan. Our first speaker today will be Professor Makoto Arai from Japan at Chuo University in Tokyo. He's a specialist in Japan adult guardianship law and has been the president of that association. He's in the graduate faculty of law at Keio University, received his JSD from Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich. He was formerly dean of the School of Law at Tsukuba University. He's published widely and has received the Officer's Cross of the Order of Merit of the Federal Republic of Germany in 2010. He's also president of the Japan Adult Guardianship Association and a standing director of the Japan Association for the Law of Trust. He also currently serves as the chairman of the Religious Juridical Persons Council, a government council within the Ministry of Education in Japan. So it's a great pleasure to turn the microphone over to Professor Arai.
I studied German law in Germany. That is the reason why my first foreign language is not English, but German. In this connection, my English needs a lot of improvement to be usable in the public. Would you please allow me today to use Japanese? So would you please use the headset, please?
皆さん準備ができていますか The population of Japan is 120 million and the total number of religious corporations is 182,000 and the breakout of which Shinto related corporations are 46.8%, Buddhist related corporations are 42.6%, and Christian corporations are 2.5%, and the others are 8.1%. And the number of believers is 197 million people. So some members, some people are doubly registered in corporations. One of a very big problems in Japan is that aging population and townships with exceedingly declining populations is forcing the closure of places of worship. It's because that they lack the number of officials needed to run and operate the corporations. So, and because some believers themselves are declining in small communities. Because of that, and we have like 3,730 corporations have lost the places of worship. The Shintoism among them, the Shintoism represent 1,502, and Buddhist 2,066 numbers, and Christians 31. So they are, there are religious corporations although they are religious corporations, they cannot function as religious corporations because of these reasons. This is a threat to the freedom of religion, and it also becomes a breeding ground for undesirable activities such as buying and selling religious corporation status. This is not permitted by law, and that leads to the loss of people's trust in religious corporations. And I am the president of the Council of Religious Corporations, and we consider this is the biggest challenge at this time. And under the law, merging of corporations and a voluntary dissolution of corporations and a dissolution under court order are permissible. So today, I would like to go back in time and discuss the roles of religious corporations and entities as they should be and ought to be. So we are going to discuss the relationships of religious corporations and also charitable trust. Do you know what trust is? There are three participants in trust, or players in the trust. One is a settler who presents the estate, and trustee, and also beneficiary of the trust. So the trustee receives the money and administer and dispose the money or estate in the interest of beneficiary. And there are three purposes for setting up trust. The first is a commercial purpose trust, and the second is family trust, and the third is charitable trust. And I believe the third, the charitable trust, is the most important among them. The origin of trust is said to be going back to 1066, when the Norman conquest took place. Normans were used to live in Europe. They went to England and conquered the area and established the Normandy dynasty. And Norman dynasty had a legal system that had duality. One is common law and the other is equity. And the trust belongs to equity. And this trust moved, from England to America and to Japan. The government established the Trust Act in 1922, mainly through U.S. However, long before this time, there was a person who used the trust. Do you know who Kukai is? He is the most famous, the most esteemed Buddhist monk in history. When I talk about Kukai to young students, they think about this the apparel the maker, the But however, this Kukai is a very esteemed Buddhist monk. Kukai established in 822 an academy. This Shuchi-in Academy, that's what it was called, was Japan's first privately owned institution of higher education for commoners. And that was very noteworthy. And establishing this academy was very difficult. However, at that time, a monetary contribution by believers to religious organizations was prohibited because the establishment or the government feared that the religious organization will become too strong to control. So what Kukai did, he used trust. It means that the believers became the settler, and trustee was the head of the believers group, and the beneficiary was the Shugeishin Academy. Now, this was a system that he used. And I have read the Kukai's prospectus for the establishment of the academy. And when I read this prospectus, I believe that he understood the function of trust very, very well. This is my hypothesis. In America and in England, they say the origin of trust goes back to Norman Quest. However, Kukai and his trust preceded that date by over 200 years. And my hypothesis is, I believe that Kukai probably was the first person who created the concept of trust. And later he studied in China, so that his idea was introduced to China, and probably via Silk Road went to the Normans and then to the England. When I talked about this in one conference about this, the English, British, the British academia was very angry. The professor was very angry with me. They are very proud of trust had its origin in England. However, I kept talking about this, and in Harvard, Harvard Law Journal, my presentation is listed in there, and it says that the first person in history who used the trust was Kukai. What I would like to talk to you about was the significance of Kukai's trust and also the charitable trust. It's the religion and charitable trust combined together created opportunity for commoners to receive a higher education in those days. And the academy still exists as a university, and it stands right in front of Kyoto Station. So when you have a chance to go to Kyoto, please go visit that university and think of Kukai as he established the academy using the trust. And the second example is about Akita. Akita is a prefecture in the northern part of Japan. In 1828, there was a merchant called Naba Yuse. He was a wealthy merchant. What he did was he used his own money and bought rice. And he did not use it for his own sake, but he asked the people he trusted to keep the rice for him. In those days, in Akita, they experienced the periods of famine, and many people perished in those days. So Naba Yuse wanted to use that rice at the time of famine, so people did not have to die from hunger. So this was a charitable trust for the sake of saving poor people. And they call it Akita Kannanko. So there in Japan used the trust for the sake of the saving the poor. This Naba Yuse in Akita, this merchant, was very, very devout Buddhist. So he created this trust and used this trust to the relief of the poor. And this was originated in his the religious conviction. Do you know there was a time Bolsonaro, there was a person called Bolsonaro, and after the the Meiji Restoration, he visited the different parts of Japan, and he visited Kyoto and learned of this Kandonko. He thought that Japan was a very primitive country, but he was impressed that Japan had this trust system was actually existed. So this person who was commissioned by the Japanese government to study Japan, he donated the entire year's provisions from the government to Kannonko, Akita Kannonko, for the sake of poverty relief. So over here too, the religious conviction united with the trust operated as the social relief. And the Akita Kannonko still exists. And at this time, they are functioning as Jito Hoikuen, which is a Kannonko shelter for children. The first example that was the Shugeishi in the academy, you can maybe able to say that was the world's first university for commoners. They say that the Bologna was the first to have a university in the world, but Shugeishi probably is the first. But this charitable organization and the supported by trust was the first to take lead in establishing this institution of higher learning for the commoners. In the history of Kannonko Association in itself, it's an important stage of the development of social services in Japan. And the association has played an enormously important social role in its history of 150 years by its systematic deployment of poverty relief activities. And through initiative of private sector under the rule of Tokugawa Shogunate, and its effort to promote its own project, exceeding at all times the level of public social welfare services by national government, even after the Meiji Restoration. And its services extend to care for children, where the government's measures are the last developed even today. It should be noted that the Shugeishi Academy was founded by a Buddhist priest, a religious person, and the Kannonko Fund was established by a merchant with a strong religious conviction. We need to admire highly the fact that such social contributions were developed in association with religions and achieved a great success. And I believe that we may conclude that the religious establishment may have much to learn from these facts. As I said earlier, that we have aging population and that there are many religious organizations losing its grounds and losing its places of worship. The importance is the religion charitable trust. The combination of these two has a very much merit, and also that we have that might provide provisions for solving problems in the current society. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you, Professor Arai. That was marvelously interesting to me as a historian. We don't have a Japan or a China specialist in this conference, but there was a similar sort of charitable estate, they called it. Kind of a trust in the Chinese system. And in Korea, Lee Il-gok advocated a welfare system for collecting grain for hard times and for people that were desperately poor, similar to what we heard about in Japan. So these three East Asian countries have very sophisticated traditions of estate and charitable estate and trust. So it's very interesting to hear about. next presenter, it's an honor for me to introduce Professor Oh Byung-sun. Professor Oh is a professor at Sogang University. Your program does not mention that Sogang is a Jesuit school, a Catholic school, to feature the religious connection there. He has been dean of the law school and has served there for 30 years. His interests include area of jurisprudence and international law, and he has served as president of both the Korean Association of Legal Philosophy and the Korean Society of International Law. He obtained his LLB from Seoul National University, the College of Law, and an LLM from Columbia University Law School, and a PhD from Edinburgh University Faculty of Law. So it's indeed a pleasure to welcome Professor Oh Byung-sun. Professor Oh.
Professor Peterson, nice introduction. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this section for East Asian issues. Let me introduce the Korean cases concerning the issues about secularization, religion, and the law. I'd like to introduce Korean cases in the issue of secularization and religion and the law. I'm sure some of you are familiar with the Korean experiences and some Korean language as well. So somebody might anticipate that I might say in Korean, in order to better understand the Korean experiences. But because this is United States classroom, so let me say in English. As you know, the Korea has a rapidly developing and still currently quite rapidly transforming society. So 60 years ago, after the Korean War, it was completely destroyed. Nothing remained in Korean society. So it was so-called ash. But nowadays, Korea can be proud of number one or number two of a shipbuilding industry, or electronics industry, or semiconductor, or heavy industry, etc. And because of this rapid transformation, Korean society experienced many difficult issues. Nowadays, that as you may imagine, that Korean society is still in the turmoil of conflict and strife. Even though it continues to exist as a peaceful society. One of reason of this political strife or instability is because of religion. And this religion somewhat gives you some stability or instability to society. Today, I'd like to introduce two or three cases concerning this religious activity. These two or three cases, symbolic cases, which should be scrutinized under the scientific investigation. Let me introduce first that one case of a conflict between religious freedom and the freedom of religious education. Freedom of religion is a domain of constitutional protection, and freedom of religious education is still domain of constitutional protection, but is closely related to sacred domain of religion. And secondly, I'd like to introduce under a new legislative proposal on taxation without exception on clergy ministers. So, and if I have time, I'd like to introduce some sexual morality with regard to religious influence. First, what I would like to introduce is that conflict between religious freedom and freedom of religious education. Recently, a Korean Supreme Court ruled in favor of a student demanding religious freedom at the school on April 23, 2010, 4 years ago. A 24-year-old courageous
religious law student won the lengthy legal battle against the Protestant high school and Seoul's education authorities when the Supreme Court ruled their students' religious freedom must be respected, even at the private mission school. Here is private mission school is Daegwang High School in Seoul, Central Seoul. Supreme Court ruled in favor of a student's argument that his religious freedom had been violated by Daegwang High School's policy, requiring students to attend a Protestant religion class as part of his curriculum, regardless of their religious beliefs. The Supreme Court ruled that Daegwang's policy failed to respect the students' basic rights because they were assigned to the school through a random lottery and did not choose its own idea, its own will, because it is so-called high school equalization policy. Let me explain this policy somehow later. The Supreme Court said that private schools must seek students' prior consent or offer alternative subjects in compulsory religious activities. In order to understand this dispute better, let me examine the facts of the case. According to the facts of the case, we can see the defendant Daegwang High School's religious event. The plaintiff student, Mr. Kang, entered to Daegwang High School by forced school assignment, which means that previously the students were assigned to the school by his own choice. So whatever the students are living in the west side of Seoul, but if the students want to enter the school in the west side of school, they can choose the school in the west side. But because of the gap or quality disparity of a high school, the education authorities changed the system, the equalization policy. So a student should be assigned to the school according to residential zone, not their own choice. So students must attend the school in nearby school from their residence. That's equalization policy. The defendant Daegwang High School has Christianity as a school founding ideology, but the plaintiff student has no religion. Daegwang High School holds 5 minutes of hymn singing and prayer every morning, even Wednesday in regular subject class. For 1 hour, there was hymn singing, sermon, and prayer as Wednesday prayer. The plaintiff attended the above events for 2 years. The above Daegwang High School makes students have the residential house education for 4 days with overnight every year. Easter prayer was held in regular subject class, and 3 days thereafter, sermons and prayers session was held instead of a regular class. At Christmas, students attended church. In 2003, the plaintiff students attended the residential house education, Easter prayer, hymn singing contest, and Thanksgiving prayer, and he attended the church at Christmas. Daegwang High School is one of the very prestigious religious school in Seoul. Pushed the foregoing religious events without the plaintiff's and other students' consent. If students do not attend, they receive the late school attendance warning. At Wednesday prayer, those who did not attend were given a disadvantage of a forced cleaning work by teacher who checked the attendance. The plaintiff student attended the school pastor. The plaintiff student expressed the school pastor and the teacher of his class antipathy to prayer participation, but teachers responded that subject where they read the Bible and discussed about it and imposed assignment to the students to write the Ten Commandments with the Apostolic Creed, and they prayed. And the teacher's opinion was stated at the student school life registry. Here, main issues in this case involve following. First, the method of resolving the problem were freedom of religious education and freedom of operation of high school, of a religiously founded school, have conflicts with past freedom of religious activity or past freedom of religious confession of students. Due to first the school assignment pursuant to high school equalization policy. Number two, the limits of freedom of religious education and freedom of operation of an incorporated educational institution of a religiously founded school, which is integrated into the public education system. So every high school should be integrated to the public education system under the sole education authorities. The standard for determining the unlawfulness where a religiously founded school spreading tenets of a specific religion in the form of a denomination education implements a religious education toward mandatorily assigned students pursuant to high school equalization policy. Based upon these facts, that the court deliberated these facts and the district court decided in favor of students, but Court of Appeal reversed the ruling and decided against the student, but Supreme Court decided in favor of a student on following reason. Let me give you reasoning. First, although high school equalization policy pursuant to school mandatory assignment system is not unconstitutional, the Supreme Court acknowledges that the legality of school equalization policy according to education policy of the country, there will be a conflict between schools' freedom of religious education and operational freedom and the students' passive freedom of religious activity and the passive freedom of religious confession. Like in the above case, where two conflicting basic rights exist as to one legal relation, it should be resolved through the interpretation for practical harmony of a constitutional provision between two basic rights with the balancing of interest under the circumstances of a specific issue. And the final unlawfulness of a certain act should be determined in consideration of limitations in the exercise of two basic rights, which are defined pursuant to above consideration. Here, two basic rights means that right of religious education and right of freedom of religion. Must consider, according to Supreme Court, that such high schools equalization policy and education, private schools' public nature, freedom of religion and freedom of operation of incorporated education institution have limits before the students' basic rights or other values of constitutional law. Here we are discussing the value structure of a constitutional law. Each constitution of a country has its own value structure. Korean constitution maintained the liberal democratic value system, liberal democracy, and with liberal democracy, the dignity of human rights is a fundamental value of Korean society. According to Supreme Court, they say we should not ignore that religious education in the religiously founded school is necessary and it has a good function. On the other hand, injuries of education are not light in degree, and there are no particular reliefs. In this regard, it should be interpreted in principle that freedom of religious education and freedom of operation is enjoyed within the measures considering a student's freedom of religion and the right to receive education. Therefore, if religious education exceeds tolerance limits, it is determined as unlawful. The Supreme Court drew a line by saying, even taking into account the freedom of a private religious education, religious schools may enjoy their basic rights within the bounds of establishing appropriate policies that take into consideration the basic rights of the students, including religious freedom. The court continued, there is a limit to the acceptableness of a religion. Religious school providing particular and sectarian education that goes beyond the level of universal, religiously neutral education to the students that enter the school regardless of their own faith. That's the ruling of the Supreme Court. But from the minority's viewpoint in the Supreme Court itself, as well as in society, there were criticisms against the ruling of the Supreme Court, which excessively restricting religious education in religious schools and extending the definition of illegal behavior too broadly may result in infringement of the constitutionally guaranteed freedom of religious education. But so far, the majority opinion prevailed in Korean society. So this is precedent in Korean society. So I can say that religious freedom of students, individual students, may prevail over freedom of religious education in missionary school. Let me give you another example of secularization of Korean society with regard to religious activity. Here, we can categorize the religious activity in two spheres. One is special domain, which is regarded as a part of a sacred service. And another one is ordinary domain, which is regarded as no difference with everyday activity of ordinary citizens. Under a new legislative proposal on taxation, without exception, clergy should pay income tax. I know this issue has been already resolved in developed countries, but this is a newly emerging issue in Korean society. So far, the religious people are regarded as belong to somewhat a sacred service domain. But because of a rapid transformation and secularization of Korean society, the authority of religious people has been decreased. So that's the reason why this issue of taxation without exception has arisen. Taxing the incomes of people belonging to religious groups has long been an elusive issue in Korean society. However, as a matter of fact, the first proposal to tax priests, ministers, and the monks was made in 1968 by the National Tax Office. But at the time, it was not successful. Intermittently over the following decades, the issue has been the subject of a social debate. It was reignited last August, and the government said that it would revise the income tax law to levy taxes on members of clergy. The Deputy Prime Minister said recently that government has been discussing the proposal with the religious groups, but the religious group had not yet reached a consensus. This is hardly convincing. In fact, Catholic priests have been paying income taxes since 1994, and the clergy members of Protestant churches and Buddhist groups also pay tax on a voluntary basis. But still, majority of Protestant church religious people do not pay the tax. Government officials are trying to explain that there would be no much difference Korea has from other developed countries which impose the tax on the clergy members, including the UK, US, Germany, France, and Japan. Now, few Koreans believe that the work of clergy members should be regarded as spiritual services that cannot be subject to government taxation. A recent opinion poll found that 88% of Korean people support taxation of religious people. Taxing clergy members may not greatly help the government's effort to increase tax revenue, since the number is small and the government plan calls for imposing taxes only 20% of their incomes. Korea has about 360,000 priests, monks, and other members of religious orders altogether, and taxing them is expected to raise about 100 billion Korean won in additional annual income, annual tax revenue. The religious sector could fear state interference in their service work and religious campaign because of tax authority. But taxation could help to overhaul bad habits and irregularities in religion. Religious groups have so far been criticized for lax financial management thanks to their tax-exempt status. In such a light, the government's taxation could contribute to enhancing the transparency and credibility in financial management of religious foundations, because personal wealth of clerics will eventually be managed by the organizations. So far, some Protestant churches are rapidly expanding in Korean society in central Seoul. If we visit the Seoul, there are many Korean churches, particularly Protestant churches, such a magnanimous building, and every Sunday, three or four services was held, and each service, even though I did not enter that service, but I guess, and I heard from the newspaper, that at one time service, 20 or 30,000 members attended the service, like a general conference in Mormon Church. So it's a huge congregation, and because of that huge congregation, the church, particularly pure gospel church of a Protestant church, amassed huge wealth. So because of the wealth, the church can invest the money to many different places and amass the personal wealth, perhaps. Taxation on religious groups could be symbolic action to buttress the principle of equality and fairness. More than 80% of religious individuals so far enjoy tax-free status. Because of the fact, taxation at the same time could trigger conflict between the government and religious groups. Government authorities now take a very cautious approach by, for example, taking incremental steps to provide fair and objective guidelines that everybody can agree to. Also, a prudent and specific approach in defining the scope of religious activities that require taxation are now being pursued. So I think now is the time is okay. So I'd like to receive the question. Thank you very much.
We can have questions from all of you for either Professor Arai.
Thank you for the presenter here. I'm from Vietnam. I am involved in the activities of religion. I want to know in Japan and Korea to building church buildings and the organization of the church and the government organization that you buy. That's the first question. The second question is, that is the land being taxed? The third question is that if a group, how do they legally have activities? Do you have agreement? Do you have to register with the government? Thank you. My question is that the land to build the church house, the organization religious, do they buy it or does the government provide that for them? And that land, do you tax on that building?
In Japan also, it's the same like in Korea. The constitution of Japan relies on the division of state and religion. So buying the public money to buy a land or a building for or individual religious organization will be against the constitution, against the law. So just like in Korea, the money will be used by as a donation from the believers, and they will use that. And of course, Kukai in 828, Kukai already did that. Used the believers' money that was as a trust. Used that money to build academy and build temples.
Just
in Japan, it is not true that the religious activity is decreasing. As I said, that the believers are quite a few. They exceed the number of the actual population. As I told you, that some people are double booking in the religions. I believe that the Japanese people are very religious people. The difference between Japan and Korea are that in Korea, Korean people put their religious feelings outward. They are more open in expressing. But I think Japanese people are more inward. They are not. They are religious people, but they internalize it more. We had a huge earthquake about 2-3 years ago, and what created unity among the people is that the religion and their rule of conduct that put together. Myself, I have not received any religious teachings. However, within me myself, I have strong religious feelings within myself. Having seen my parents and my brothers and sisters, show their religious activities throughout their life, so I believe that it's very. When people looking at Japanese religions from outside, how do you feel about Japanese religion and how Japanese people appear to be? I would appreciate your opinions about that. And will that suffice as an answer to your question? And it is not actually true. There are quite a bit of Christian activities taking place in Japan, and a lot of people are interested in Christianity. And when the Christian churches have activities, a lot of non-believers attend those activities also. And the Japanese people love Christmas, and they go to churches and they sing Christian hymns to celebrate Christmas. However, they go to Shinto shrine on a New Year's Day and pray to God. So Japanese people perceive religion as that. So you might say that the Japanese people are open to all religions in that way.